We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dame Moore NBA podcast brought to you by the Genesis Company, coming to you Monday morning. It's March 11th after the Wolves 120-109 loss in LA to the Lakers on Sunday night. Chris Hine, you are there. You're now outside with a couple chirping birds.
That's right. We got some. We have some lovely friends joining us this morning here on my friend's porch. So yeah,
in sunny LA.
Sunny LA, listen, if we're going to do an outdoor podcast, where else do you want to do it besides lovely Los Angeles?
So, exactly. So exactly. You were there at Crypto last night. You saw the Wolves play, not only without Karl-Anthony Towns, without Rudy Gobert, and without Kyle Anderson. I think the place to start sort of talking about like game specifics is Nas, but I'm just kind of curious. I wasn't there. Like, what was sort of just the vibe and the lead up to the game? Once, you know, you found out that Gobert wasn't playing, Anderson wasn't playing, and you knew this was going to kind of be a cobble it together sort of night.
You know, I think it's always different when you see guys hit the injury report with hamstrings. I think that's one thing you learn in the course of being on an NBA beat or a sports beat in general. We've seen like Rudy pops up on the injury report with like ankle soreness from time to time or knee soreness, whatever it is. Hamstring soreness is always a little differently handled, and it tends to cost guys at least a couple games when you see that pop up, because it's just so, you just don't want it to get any worse and, you know, keep guys out for potentially longer. So when we get the mid-afternoon injury report update, Rudy's got hamstring soreness. In my mind, I'm thinking probably not going to go tonight. So I saw him, you know, warming up. He was going through like a, you know, pregame routine, and then, you know, the inactive list and starters come out. He's not on it. Kyle's not on it either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think at that point you're just in your mind 45 minutes, half hour before tip off, thinking this is just going to be a game unlike any other that they have played all season, and they're going to have to win it in a totally different way than they normally play. That's not to say they can't. And you know, they gave it three really good quarters last night. We're right there, but I think it's just defensively, it just wasn't there all night. You know, Mike Conley afterwards, you know, was saying, he's like, you know, just in terms of where guys need to be, and Rudy kind of directing traffic, and you know, where he usually is versus where guys are used to going, it just all was kind of jumbled last night. Guys were hesitant, a little slow, and that results in a night like last night.
Do you get any sort of indication on whether or not Rudy or Kyle will be back on Tuesday?
Just no, no, yeah. There's Finch said Rudy. Yeah, he had no indication on Rudy after the game last night. So, and again, I think that, you know, with a hamstring, you don't know. Like Monte sure. Morris now has missed the last two games because of hamstring soreness. It's just kind of a day-to-day thing where it's like, how is it today? Can you go? Yes, no. You know, you just kind of check in. I mean, but he was, you know, if you could take this for what it's worth, like him and Kyle were, you know, going through workouts like they were, sure. You know, they weren't like, they didn't come to the locker room in like their, you know, quote unquote street clothes and like didn't do anything. You know
what
I mean?
They warmed up,
like,
at least.
Like they warmed up. They were going through workouts, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and so if you want to take that for a little something, they both at least were putting in some work pregame.
Okay, so we'll put a pin on that and we'll see. I mean, it seemed like it at least has the possibility, given sort of the context of how many games they've been playing too, that at least part of the factor would be just rest oriented, even if there is an injury there too. But we'll see. There'll be another injury update that will come out here. What it was, though, last night was no Cat, was no Anderson, was no Gobert. And that probably made us know that Naz Reid was going to be a key theme of this. But I thought Naz basically tied to every big theme in this, you know, entire game. You know, positives first. He was awesome in the first half, right? He had 21 points, 7 of 10 shooting, 5 of 7 from 3, 3 assists. He was decisive, and like the Lakers, how they were matching up with him, they didn't really have any answers for him in the first half at all. But in the first half on the defensive side of the ball, as you said, the Wolves had no answers for the Lakers attack either. I mean, 2 years ago, Naz was playing the 5 and they played that aggressive coverage style. And, you know, he was decent at it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's just a style of defense that they don't play hardly ever anymore. And when they do, it's often with Naz not at the 5. So there was just, I remember like the very first possession of the game that the Lakers ran a pick and roll. It was like Naz was just came up so far and then Davis dives down and then Naz, remember that? Then Naz is scrambling back to him.
Scrambling back all and then 30 feet. And
then it ended up being a Hachimura, like Naz then tries to get out to Hachimura in the corner and hits it.
Wide
and it
open. Just,
It was just, I like paused it and went back and looked at it, and it wasn't just the coverage. I was like, man, there's just more cracks in this defense, not even like schematic, but size. You know, part of the Wolves defense this season, when you just watch them in the half court, is they take up so much space, right? Defensively. And when you go smaller, when your center is Naz Reid versus Rudy Gobert and all the trickle down of that, there was just more holes in it, and they didn't have a coverage. It felt like in the first half, or really in the second half, they tried different things, but they just had, like you said, no defensive answers. I think given the personnel and given rustiness with that style of play. All that said, though, like Naz's offense in the first half, right, versus their lacking defense, mm-hmm. kind of balanced out. It's like 69-68 at halftime. It felt like, you know, maybe this is a game that the Wolves offense can score with them. Can we go to some zone or something to just slog it up, right? And make it work. They tried different things defensively in the second half, but the real thing that changed the game, I thought, was the Lakers' defensive adjustment in the second half. They did the Gobert thing. They took Davis off of Naz Reid. They parked him at the rim, theoretically guarding Jaden McDaniels, put Rui Hachimura on Naz, who's like, you know, obviously not a better defender than Anthony Davis, but a big enough of a body that he could kind of move with Naz, and then Davis was there at the rim. And then Naz goes from, again, 21 points in the first half to, I think it was 4 points in the second half of 2 of 7 shooting. It was a chess match that it felt like the Wolves didn't have enough chess pieces on the board.
I mean, Jaden knocks down some of those shots. Do things change up a little bit after that? Like if Jaden comes out and in that, you know, hits like 3 or 4 threes instead of going like 0 for 6 or whatever.
Then it works, right?
Mm-hmm. So the Lakers took a gamble that Jaden McDaniels wasn't going to hurt them the way that Naz Reid hurt them in the first half, and they were right. Mm-hmm. It was just one of those bad shooting nights for Jaden in that sense. And then I think in the fourth quarter, I really do think fatigue played a role. I mean, look, Naz Reid played 42 minutes last night. Ant played 40 again. Nikhil was up towards 40. They did manage to keep Conley around 30. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the rest of the starters, you know, you're asking Naz Reid, who only plays, you know, 20 to 25 minutes a night typically, to now jump up to 42. That's, I mean, listen, they're finely conditioned athletes and things like that. But asking him to play 17 more minutes of NBA basketball than he normally plays, it's an adjustment. It's going to be an adjustment.
In the middle of the schedule, too,
you're human, right? Right. Yeah. It's going to be an adjustment. You might feel tired. And Nas admitted that, you know, he felt a little fatigued last night. But, you know, in the same breath, he also said, he's like, this is what you ask for as an NBA player, though. You want minutes. So you got to, you know, when opportunities like this come around, you have to take them and embrace them. So, you know, he's not making excuses, but I think it's just natural to see in the fourth quarter, they were gassed. And so that's just a product of having four players who are normally in the rotation out.
Yeah. And with four players who are normally in the rotation out, multiple needed to step up. With the Indiana and the Cleveland game, you know, Britt and I were talking about after the Cleveland game of like, all right, the Indiana game, right? It took this Herculean effort from Ant. And then, you know, if they would have came out on top of the Cavs game, we would have been like, okay, Herculean Nas effort here. They didn't, they got a good first half from Nas, but they needed a second guy. And a lot of teams, and the Lakers certainly did, are trying to take Ant out of that or make it so it's just one of those two, not both of them at the same time. Mm-hmm. Whether it was the way the Lakers were matching up with them or whatever, they just needed more juice from somebody else, anybody else. And the place you would look is Jaden McDaniels, particularly the way they were matching up with him. And I think there's a lot of frustration, you know, about with Jaden, you know, right now, and, you know, pointing to that and his inability to punish that matchup in the second half last night. I will say, like, they don't know that that's going to happen to start the third quarter. You know what I'm saying? Like, Jaden doesn't know that, like, all of a sudden, all right, I got to kind of be the guy, or at least like option number two here for the second half, when, you know, he isn't normally in that spot. It reminded me so much of that first Celtics game where out of nowhere, kind of, the Celtics put Jrue Holiday on Kat and they put Porzingis on Jaden, and Jaden like ignored, and Jaden was all of a sudden like, okay, oh, seemed a little like shocked to know that I need to be the guy here. So I say that to mean, if there is like some sort of extended stretch of some main guys being out in addition to Kat, or even if it's just Kat, like, Jaden needs to do more, but also there needs to kind of be a plan in place of how to get him to do more, right? Like,
that's true. Yeah.
He's not going to be the guy that's just going to be like, okay, here it is, I got to go, you know, on a whim. It needs to kind of be a structure in place to get him there. And now, you know, with a couple of days of practice, and they're going to talk about all these things. Every single team is going to put two on the ball on Ant all the time. They're loading up on Nas, gap help. They're doubling Nas. Like, Jaden, this is what's going to be happening here. Jordan, Mike, whatever. Like, you guys need to step up. I think glass half full, there can be some greater preparation now with some time of how and the ways in which this team is going to be defended when it's not at full strength here. And I think some of that preparation, particularly for Jaden, when you go from being almost always fourth or fifth in the pecking order offensively to now maybe second or third. I think just some awareness of that in advance will help. But at the end of the day, if they don't get, you know, more from Jaden, it is going to be the first time they win or lose a third game in a row. It is going to be, you know, some poor offense. They need offense to step up around Nas and Ant right now. And I think Jaden, are there other places, like, what other places would you think of adding offense to?
I mean, I think, you know, Mike Conley is one, just his usage hasn't gone up. And Mike admitted that he's, you know, quote unquote, playing through the mud. Mm-hmm. Right now of the season. And I think it's natural to look at how their schedule has been after the All-Star break, which is a furious sprint, pretty much. Four sets of back-to-backs. Last night was the fifth game in seven days.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that right now they are the most injured they have been all season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think these two things go hand in hand, right? So I think if Mike, when he kind of gets through this moment, you know, that is happening on the schedule, I think maybe you look to him a little bit. And of course, if Rudy's back out there and they can run more you know, pick and rolls, whenever Rudy's available again, you know, maybe they get back to some of that. And I just think, you know, they're not practicing today, for instance. Guys played so many minutes last night, so there is no practice out here today. Play tomorrow. But then, you know, they have 3 days off before they play Utah. And they're going to be staying out here on the West Coast. So I think that's the time, you know, kind of to your point, where they'll be, you know, maybe drilling down and trying to rediscover some things before they fly to Utah this coming weekend. Mm-hmm. So I think coming up later this week is maybe the chance where they can really do that and say, okay, what are we going to look like for the next couple of weeks now with Carl out, and they'll get some practices in to be able to try and figure that all out.
I want to talk more about Mike in particular, because this wasn't an isolated, poor game, stuck in the mud game for him. But let's grab our first break here. Today's show is brought to you by Adriana Lonick, who is a realtor at Coldwell Banker. You can find her at thedancingrealtor.com. It's also in the show notes on YouTube or in the podcast. And if you are in the stage of your life where you are thinking about starting the process of purchasing a home, the next step you are going to have to make is getting a realtor. And we want you to consider Adriana and what she does with Coldwell Banker. And again, how you do that is going to thedancingrealtor.com to set up a free consultation with Adriana, a consultation where she can kind of walk you through your personalized steps of what it's going to take for you to buy or sell your home. And we are offering a perk. Those of you who do set up a free consultation, you know, however big that cup is of people who set up that consultation with her, we will do a drawing for a pair of Wolves tickets to a game down the stretch. Adriana is a Wolves fan and season ticket holder. So much of the buying and or selling a home process is about figuring out even where to begin. And one place to do that is thedancingrealtor.com, or you can call or text Adriana at 715-304-9920 to book a consultation. Get the ball rolling on home ownership and score a pair of free Wolves tickets at thedancingrealtor.com. And then also just quickly, we always want to remind you about Prize Picks, prizepicks.com, the Prize Picks app. You can use the promo code Dane for a $100 sign-up bonus. A bunch of NBA games going on tonight. You can just kind of, I think that's kind of the more fun time to look at it. When the Wolves aren't playing, you know you're going to be watching some NBA games. Take a look at points plus rebounds plus assists. Like Luka's number is like 53 and a half or something on that. Is he going to get more or less than that? It's a fun way to be watching games. And again, you can do that at prizepicks.com or the Prize Picks app using the promo code Dane. All right, Chris. Mike Conley. I was just looking at it before the game, or before the pod here, just Conley's last, what is this, 7 games. And if you go through it, minus 24 last night in a game, they lose by 11. The game before that, minus 10 when he was on the floor in a game, they lose by 9. Plus minus of 0 the game before that in a game, they won by 2. Minus 3 in a game, they won by 5. Plus 8 in one game, in a game they lost by 1, minus 22 in a game they lost by 4, minus 8 in a game they lost by 9. So that's 6 of the last 7 games. They've been worse, actually significantly worse with Conley on the floor versus when he's on the bench. Like you said, I watched that the clip or the media afterwards. He did say he feels a little bit like he's playing in the mud right now, and it looks like that makes sense, kind of. That the 36-year-old would be the one maybe just not having anywhere near the necessary amount of juice to play with when he's, you know, when they're going through these 5 games and 7 nights and 4 back-to-backs since the All-Star game. But man, they need Mike Conley now more than ever. It feels like he's going to unlock other offensive options, whether it's him individually or, like you said, with the kind of with Rudy in 2-man game.
Yeah, it's, you know, he had a very, I thought, you know, very candid quote last night where, you know, he's like, I got to do this. I got to be better. It's like, just so happens I'm in the game at the wrong time. Quote, sometimes I'm the reason why they came back. I gave up some defensive plays or not making shots offensively. But then in the same breath, he said, he's like, I know what I'm capable of. Mm-hmm. This will pass, essentially. and he'll kind of get back to playing the way that he normally plays. But yeah, this is the time where they need everybody to step up. Nas is stepping up. That's something that we all thought needed to happen. And this is what Nas did last year too. He elevated his game when Carl went out and, you know, kind of really took another step, and maybe he's taking even another step this year. But yeah, just having Mike be a little more higher usage, taking a few more shots, knocking down a few more threes. Like, they need that right now. They I forget what was the stat line last night, but it didn't, like, Mike Conley's stat line didn't look any different than it does.
Yeah. 9 points, six assists, three boards, 3 of 6 from the field, 1 of 3. Yeah.
Mike Conley's still only taking 6 shots. Doesn't seem even in a game where they were jacking up threes left and right. It's like, you know, you want a guy who's shooting 40% from 3-point range to be taking a lot of those threes, ideally. So I just think it's, you know, they need a little more usage out of him. And I think ultimately he recognizes that, and it's just a matter of getting back to that level, however long that's going to take.
I think, like, they can use Mike to break the ways in which teams are loading up or accounting extra for Ant and Nas just by playing pick and roll, you know, just by, like, throwing in a level of confusion on a Nas pop, right? Pop versus dive. And they can't completely be set to be loaded up against that. Like, Nas last night, if it was one guy, it wasn't really an issue. Once it was, I got to get through this guy, and then I got to get through the next guy, that's more complicated. And I think that's what more and more teams, as this, they're scouting the non-Cat Wolves, are going to do against Nas. They're going to guard him more and more like Cat. So can you find, and can you use Nas's speed and decisiveness through Mike pick and roll to get the defense shifting, to get Nas in a place where he can catch, go, shoot, whatever. And then I think the same thing comes through that from Ant, right? You run a Conley Nas pick and roll. You run a Conley Gobert pick and roll if he's back, and you get it back to Ant on the swing where he can go and, it's again, attack decisively, only needing to beat one guy. Like, they need to put their best offensive players in the least adverse offensive setups as possible right now, because they're so dry in terms of the offense that they have. And I think the way to do that is with ball and body movement, and you make that start happening with, like, a scripted action like that. Because if teams can just sit with their back to the basket and look and see what Ant and Nas want to be doing, like, I think most teams are going to be able to take that away. And the Wolves can't be a mediocre offense right now. Like, they can't. And they need more juice in the half court. Maybe they can get some more in transition. All, like, they got to find these other low-hanging fruits. But I think a lot of it starts with Mike Conley, who probably is was their third best offensive option in that game last night. It feels like a lot kind of relies on him right now.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, I do want to see, like, if Rudy plays in that game last night, what does it look like for Mike?
He takes more than 6 shots, right?
Right, he takes more than 6 shots. So, you know, Rudy being out, and we didn't really delve into that with him. We should have maybe asked him that, which is, like, just how do you approach it offensively when Rudy isn't there?
He kind of needs Rudy to get going.
Yeah, exactly. So, I, you know, maybe that's something that we can revisit, you know, Tuesday night if Rudy doesn't play in that game as well. Just kind of what's Mike's mindset? How is he going to attack Tuesday maybe a little differently than he attacks Sunday? But yeah, I just think, look, he played through this whole stretch. Yeah. He could use the couple days off on the West Coast to get some rest and rejuvenation and all that I really do think it is just this moment of the season where it's just tough, and he's been very durable this year. Right. But you know, I think he just needs to find that extra gear again somehow, and the schedule hasn't done him any favors.
This may be a decent time to point out that Jordan McLaughlin was pretty good, and he brings some point guard juice in a different way than Mike does. You're not gonna really just run that spread pick and roll with, you know, J-Mac and Rudy in the ways you do with Mike and Rudy. But, you know, J-Mac, he can press that pace button, right? And get the ball moving and going. And particularly now when he's making these threes, Grant, they aren't guarding him. Like, they're open threes. But he made 4 of the 9 threes he took last night. He's up to 43% on the team. Looked it up this morning. That's the best three-point percentage.
Best three-point percentage on the team, the yes.
I mean, it's only 58 attempts.
I looked at that the other day myself. I was wondering where Nas ranked in terms of three-point shooting on the team. And then I was like, I forgot about Jordan. Jordan McLaughlin shooting
over 40% this
year. Listen,
yeah,
that's huge. I've actually been meaning to, once I realized that, I'm like, I should talk to him about, like, see if there's anything that he did differently. Yeah. So I hope to maybe catch up with him.
It's confidence. I mean, I would guess, right? His answer would be confidence, right? Last year at this time, he had probably, gone on a stretch of terrible shooting. And then with him, that kind of makes the defense not respect him at all. And then he kind of has to drive, right? And he could do that because he's quick. And, like, we know he can finish. We've seen that plenty. But when they know that's all he's going to be doing, it just feels like he gets nullified in that way. And then all he can do really is add to the game. But with this shot here, maybe that opens up a couple different ways that he can impact this. And I think it's important. Like, even if Monte Morris plays on Tuesday, which I'm not necessarily expecting because, like you said, the hamstring. But, like, in theory, like, I think J-Mac still plays. And I think of your 8 guys, 9 guys, 3 of them are point guards. And, like, Finch is clearly comfortable doing that. So, when Conley's stuck in the mud and when Morris is hurt here and how, what's he going to even look like when he's able to come back, it is nice to have a third point guard who's really like a second and a half point guard. At least he has been this season to go to. That's a positive in my mind that came out of this game. It's just adding point guard player.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's earned, again, a longer look when Monte Morris does come back. I do think secretly that Monte Morris, they really could use him right now.
Yeah.
I think this is actually a significant thing that's happened these last 2 games that he's gone out and hasn't been available.
It's probably a good point. Yeah.
I think he was really rounding into form. I think the shot was coming back for him. Like, I think they really could have used him these last 2 games.
He is another one of those guys that they guard on the perimeter.
Yeah.
And that's even a difference than J-Mac. Like, cool, J-Mac's making 43% of them. I think what Monte, when I looked at it last, was like 39%, which is what he always shoots, has always shot throughout his career. So they just guard him more, which, like, you could almost, particularly with how much they're loading up on Nas and Ant, it's almost more valuable right now to be a perimeter spacer that's guarded rather than even being a perimeter spacer that's making.
That's not guarded.
You know what I'm saying? Like, even if you're not guarded,
it opens up everything else on a possession-by-possession basis.
So if J-Mac goes, like, 2 of 9 rather than 4 of 9 last night, that's a different sort of thing. There's some randomness to it. I think the biggest thing, and maybe J-Mac will start getting this, is more of that respect, being guarded in the corners at least. So there's more – they just need – more room. They need more room for easy offense in the 2-point area. Like, if every single time Ant or Nas get within 7 feet and they have to, like, do a Euro step backwards finish at the rim, like, it's just tough right now, and having other weapons that have to be respected, which they're low on right now. And I mean, they're low on, right? Like, if J-Mac Garza played, who's the third guy off?
TJ Warren.
Yeah, TJ Warren, who's, he's been actually pretty solid, I feel like, out of nowhere for them too. Like, I think they have enough. It's just, enough to survive. It's just kind of about putting those in the right spots and those guys sort of confidently executing from there, I think.
Yeah, it's just, the margin of error is just slimmer on a night like Sunday night as well.
Yeah.
You look up and it's the fourth quarter and... this is no disrespect to TJ Warren, but he hasn't played professional basketball all year, and in the fourth quarter he's finding himself one-on-one matched up against LeBron James defensively.
That's not good.
Welcome back to the NBA, right? That's where the Wolves were at in this game, and I think TJ Warren's done a really nice job of filling in, and he's looked the part, and And I wonder, you know, I wonder if that leads to a permanent spot the rest of the way here, the way that he's performed.
But last night's game, it's just like this is
where they're at in this game, and it's, you know, it's just not ideally where you want to be on the defensive end. That's all.
I had somebody text me this morning. Will TJ Warren be in the playoff rotation? And I was like,
it's not a crazy question to be asking right now.
I said,
right?
Yeah, if Cat's out, right? Like,
yeah, it's not an off base question.
Was that
person our mutual friend, the Life Gorgeous host podcast, Mr. Craig Kilborn, by any chance?
No, it wasn't, but he was probably asking the same thing.
Got to hang with him while I've been in LA.
Oh, yeah.
Big TJ Warren fan.
Okay. Of course. I mean, I've been a fan of it too, you know, even mm-hmm. just like, I think in all three games, he has a possession where it's like 7 seconds left on the shot clock. All right. You know, one dribble here and do like his little quick fling 17 footer and he made it, you know? Yeah. I mean, for the most part, he's a spacer, but he's also like a break glass in case of emergency spacer who can maybe get you something there. Like, I think the skill set, you know, makes sense. I think it's a Shake Milton role. Seems kind of weird. We maybe think of like TJ Warren as more of like a four or something and Shake as a 1-2. But it kind of feels like that. Like, he's coming in and I bet you he's played 85% of his minutes without Ant on the floor. That's kind of like the Ant's out, TJ Warren is in. They've overlapped some, but most of it has been in that way. I actually think it's a pretty decently important role for this team right now. And even with Kyle Anderson and Rudy Gobert back in there, feels like TJ Warren is maybe part of the mix here. Maybe against a smaller team, you don't do it, but yeah. He's part of the story here for the rest of the season.
It's crazy. It is crazy. It's been really cool to see. It's crazy. Like, Justin Jackson never got any run, and TJ Warren on night one was playing major minutes, and it's just like, how did this happen? It just happened like so quickly.
Right place, right time.
Yeah. No. Seriously. Right.
Like. Yeah,
100%, and yeah, I think it's been just very cool. See, I haven't really gotten the chance to really talk to him yet because I wasn't in Cleveland and Indy. You guys were, didn't really get a chance to talk to him last night, but I hope to maybe at like, you know, an upcoming practice here or something like that. But yeah, that's a cool just human story of you know, in the NBA.
Right? Once you're out, you're normally out. Or maybe you get back in, like you said, with Justin Jackson.
This is how it happens, right? You're out. You get it. You maybe get some 10 days. You know, you're in the G League. You know, and does it ever click again? Right.
Right.
And you know, it seems to be clicking at the moment.
Today's show is brought to you by AG1, and I've been taking AG1 every morning for the last 6 weeks. I'm really liking it. Before I was taking AG1, I just often felt sluggish in the morning. It was harder to get focused quickly. But since I've been taking AG1 every morning, just mixed in with water on an empty stomach, I started noticing the energy was there earlier. I noticed I could get focused quicker and honestly just felt a real difference in my overall daily health. And that's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop includes prebiotics and probiotics and digestive enzymes for gut support. I recommend AG1 to some of my friends and my family because it is formulated based on the latest science and maintains high quality standards. I even got Kyle to try it out too. He said he's feeling that energetic spark earlier in the mornings. My daily routine for the last 6 weeks has been a scoop of AG1 in a cup of water first thing in the morning every day. And I did this because I knew I needed a better morning routine. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. That's drinkag1.com/Dane Moore. Check it out.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Chris, let's talk about Ant a little bit here. Mm-hmm. And just what I've been saying. You know, I spent all this, you know, this time once we find about the cat thing and you start looking for like replacements. Okay, Kyle Anderson, Naz Reid, which lineup combinations have worked without cat, blah, blah, blah. And so much like we're immediately smacked in the face with the Indiana game of like, well, the best answer is Ant being awesome, you know, just more yes. Ant, you know. Yeah. And clearly that happened and worked against the Pacers, one of the worst defensive teams in the year or in the league. You go Cleveland and the Lakers, who are much bigger, put up a lot more resistance at the rim, and it's harder. You know, it's harder for Ant. He's also dealing with all the fatigue factors that everyone else is, probably even more than anyone else is, as the highest usage player on the team. But he's getting frustrated. I think he's getting frustrated about as much coverage as he's receiving, and then he's also been really, you know, frustrated with the refs and the fouls here. I'll play that clip from you guys talking to him about that last night in the locker room.
So shorthanded, you came in here and said you should have won that game.
Hell yeah.
What's kind of the mentality right now when you know you are fighting with one hand behind your back?
It's tough every night. When we don't get to the free throw line as much as the other team. When one player shoots more free throws than your entire team, it's tough. You know, it's tough to compete in the fourth quarter when you miss a shot and they go into the free throw line every time down the floor. So it's tough, man. So I tip my hat to my teammates, my coaches. You just got to go out there and fight every night.
Yeah. How do you let that not get you guys down too much?
It's hard. It's hard. It's hard not to. I mean, for any player, like, because you want to compete. And if every time they get the ball and we so-called foul them and they get to the free throw line, it's tough that I don't know how to explain it, man. We want to compete out there and be able to play without, you know, the foul calls. Sure.
Is that just getting your mind when you play defense?
It getting your mind on offense. I mean, yeah, throughout the whole game. I mean, the stuff that they tell us, the reason why it is a foul and why it's not a foul, it's crazy to us, for sure.
How do they explain those things?
I mean, it's just pretty much, I think I asked one of the refs today, I'm driving the ball and he smacks my arm. I know you heard it. Is it not a foul? He told me no. And I said, so what you calling for them? And then, you know, I just left the conversation alone. It was a great, great, great game. Great rest tonight. See y'all later.
I think my favorite part of that clip was
the Gatorade.
The Gatorade. Yes.
I know.
How many times he like brought the Gatorade up and drink it. And then he never.
It's like nine Gatorade pump fakes. That you got to, if you listen
so
to this
many
podcast,
Gatorade pump fakes. Yeah,
go to the YouTube channel. Oh my god, that was
he's holding
funny.
A Gatorade bottle up the entire time he's talking, threatening to take a drink, but he never does.
That was funny. Was
funnier than his comments. Yeah,
right. I mean, it's I'm trying to think about it in the sense of like, okay, guys, we gotta like chill out a little bit on all the ref stuff. It can't be all consuming. But then the other part of me goes, all right, like there's just frustration going on right now. Understandably, there's frustration going on. You got your three bigs are all hurt and you didn't get a play in that game. You've had the schedule and all that. And like, it's human nature sometimes to project some blame. And I know that they also, there's truth to that too. Like Ant is feeling like he's getting bumped. And sometimes he is too. I mean, the LeBron smack of Garza's arm, you know, in the third, fourth quarter, whatever that was, that didn't get called. I mean, I'm not saying there's not being missed calls with this team right now, but it's like, man, There's already a lot of stuff going against
it. I thought just overall a consistent. What do players always say? They say, I don't care if it's a loose whistle or it's a tight whistle. I just want it to be consistent. Mm-hmm. That was a consistently officiated game last night. It was loose both ways, I thought. The Wolves were not called for a ton of fouls. Yes, Anthony Davis went to the free throw line. But if you look over, 13 times, whatever it was. But if you look at total fouls called, it was not an egregious night in terms of fouls called.
Yeah, and off the top of my head, it was a lot of just like the Davis ones were. I mean, the second half, he just started going to the offensive glass.
Right.
Like crazy. Yeah. Wolves were tired. He saw that as an opportunity in mm-hmm. size and spirit. Think about Rudy, right? Rudy gets fouled all the time when he just goes to attack the glass, and it's like some 6 foot six guy who comes in with a chicken
wraps him up, or
you know, like that happens there too. I was a bit surprised, turn out the game last night, and a couple hours later, as I'm going to bed, like looking at Twitter, and there's all this. It was the refs again, sort of thing. And I don't like touching the ref stuff. Me and Britt went all into it, obviously, with the Foster game.
Sure.
I thought that game and that situation to my bar really justified it.
Last night was a ref show.
Yeah, it felt like lingering frustration from that. And maybe overall for the season, I don't think if we graded the quality of the whistle the Wolves have received this season, they're not in the top half of the league. That sucks. And again, like we said last episode, there's ref problems going on in this league. I just think, like you said before, there's this small, an even smaller margin for this team, particularly on offense. Even at full strength, this team not a good offense, did not have a big offensive margin. That margin shrinks without Cat. It shrinks down with more players being injured. And now I feel like you're shrinking it a little bit more by being consumed with the rest, not just Ant specifically, but just overall it just kind of feels like one of those times where it just needs to be moving on through it and understanding that it sucks. It sucks when you feel like you're getting fouled. We all know that, but I don't know. It can't consume. It just can't.
This is what happened last year. They started losing games with Carl out, and so they turned their focus and attention to the refs and cried and complained all season long about that. And look, I don't know how referees think. I don't, we don't talk to referees, right? But when Rudy Gobert makes a gesture like that to Scott Foster and then says what he says after the game, and earlier in the season, Anthony Edwards is caught on a microphone in Oklahoma City saying cheating blank refs, I don't know that that's really going to endear them to the officials of the league. You know what I'm saying?
No,
And if you're looking for the benefit of the doubt or something like that, like doing this publicly to the officials.
Yeah, they're on their bad side.
I wonder, as an officiating brethren, do they take it a certain way?
I don't know, but my assumption would be yes, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Mm-hmm. And I think, and whatever, I think particularly when the things that Rudy is implying are that bad, with it being that it's rigged and that there's money and those sort of things. Like, I would imagine most refs, for the most part, they get complained to every single game. There's a reasonable margin for error in that of complaints they'll let go. But even prior to the Rudy suspension or the fine and getting, the technical kicked out of that game, whatever, or fouled out of that game, I think this team already kind of had a label of a complaining type of team, right? Like, I don't think that was out of, I don't know, they've built up that reputation somewhat this season. And it's hard because I don't think the refs are doing a great job either. It's the most it stood out to me in any season since I've been covering the NBA. But at the same time, it's like, I remember when we were in Chicago, Rudy said something. He's like, the reffing is what it is. I don't think it's going to change and we need to operate accordingly. And like those words, which I'm prefacing, but you were there, said something along those lines, and that mentality, that ethos, I think needs to sink in here too, because it just it's not going to work if it feels like this every game.
Well, they're not operating accordingly is what's happening.
Yeah.
They're trying to operate as if they could still get, you know, the quote unquote fair, good whistles on a nightly basis. It's not happening. Get over it and move on.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, it's just, it's one of the bones I have to pick with this team is like, get over the officiating already. Just get over it. Like in the playoffs, if they don't call stuff, it will benefit you in the long run because you will be able to defend to your heart's content.
That's a good
point. Playoffs. So, you know, I really just need to get over it. They really do.
Yeah. It's the $1 million question when it comes to officiating, right? It's like controlling your emotions, but also applying pressure is important on the refs to some degree too. You know, that's where there's,
but I think in the last couple games, it has started to affect them negatively.
Mm-hmm.
That's the line.
Yeah.
And that is where they're going back across that line in a negative way and they need to reel it back in.
Yeah, they do. It's again, just because they already have things working against them that are outside of their control.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And this is another one that they, you know, I guess they can control themselves a little bit in it and have, I don't know. Yeah. Just move forward without it derailing you, because that seems like what has been happening a lot recently. Anything else really you want to hit from this game? I wrote down that, you know, Luka Garza played.
I tweeted this at one point. I said, Luka Garza, 7 minutes, 7 points, 3 fouls. I'm like, sometimes the world is very predictable. You know, it's like that is the Luka Garza experience. And you got it in full force last night.
It was like that very first, he hit that corner three.
Yeah, comes in right away, hits a three. And
then gets poured on, like,
He committed, he gave up an offensive rebound and committed a foul on the first defensive possession or
just
something.
Just right
like that.
Through
like,
him.
Yeah.
It is the experience, and it is why he hasn't ever had a consistent, hasn't been in the rotation, is because there's that trade off with him. There's the buckets versus what you're sacrificing defensively. It's funny, like, I almost feel like for him, the better time to have been dropped into the rotation would have been when they had a depleted but more defensive group out there.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, last night, they didn't really need offense as much as they needed defense, wouldn't you say? In the game?
Yeah, no, agreed, 100%. Yeah.
And he had to play and should have played in that game there, but it was like, all right, we're going to try and make up for more of what we don't have, which is defense, with more offense. And, you know, I mean, it wasn't like Nas was just as bad as he was defensively, I thought. Like, they were lost in whatever coverage it was that they were in. And, you know, you're going up against, I mean, a lot of the times, like, Nas or Luka are at the five, and it's Anthony Davis and Jackson Hayes on the four for their team. Just gigantic, you know? And then it's LeBron, Torian Prince. Like, they're playing a huge, huge team last night when the Wolves are playing their smallest roster ever. And, you know, and Garza, to that end, it makes sense that he didn't stand out in a big way. His minutes were also, you know, super limited. I think there's a case with him that it's like, maybe you give him more extended stretches, more of a piece of the offense, and he gives you more. But now you're playing, it seemed like Finch did not wanted to play Garza as little as he needed to, right? What did you say? It was 9 minutes.
Yeah.
And Nas plays 42 or whatever. Like,
I don't know.
It's just like making it work with him requires certain concessions, and I don't know. I mean, it wasn't the end of the world having him on the floor, but it wasn't what you would hope for in the okay G League MVP Luka Garza's here, and now the Wolves have an 18 points off the bench a night guy. That isn't the role, and it's honestly not really what they needed in that game either, I thought.
Yeah, well, it's just, you know, It's hard to have what you need when you have as many injuries as they had.
That's
even if Kyle Anderson is able to go and Rudy's not, I wonder how differently that game goes defensively for them. If
Kyle
can handle some LeBron minutes, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, Kyle being back is because he can just guard anybody pretty much.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like they put him on Jared Allen in the overtime once Rudy fouled out, right? Like
he can
guard some centers there that or they feel more confident than with him on that guy than Nas, you know, whatever. Like, yeah, it would be interesting to like run that game multiple times. Like, what does it look like if just Rudy is in there? What does it look like if just Kyle is in there? What does it look like if Rudy and Kyle are in there? Obviously they played without both of them. And to that end, I thought it was an accomplishment that at halftime the game was close.
Like, yeah, and they had the lead through three quarters. Like they were up. You know,
that's what it was. It was at the
that game was, you know, going in the fourth quarter, a winnable game. And then, you know, the offense just needed to play at a supernova like level for four quarters, and it didn't for the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. That was the game.
It was just done.
Essentially, it was just
I think the game was done once they made the Rui onto Nas switch. And once that first, I mean, Jaden played the first 5 minutes of the third quarter, and then Finch got him early for TJ Warren because they didn't have an answer for that. They didn't have an answer for the Davis at the rim thing, I thought. And then Nas being guarded by Rui, even really double teamed in that sort of way. It was like they kind of survived that, but ultimately couldn't get 24 minutes in the second half of good enough offense to play with it. And yeah, maybe one more body would have made a difference, right?
Yeah, I think it could have.
Almost certainly would have. Yeah. So.
Yeah. But we'll one of those games, and we'll see. We'll see who's healthy and available on Tuesday night out here. If you can stay up late to watch it.
Yes. Yes. That is up next. Wolves, Clippers. Jason and I will talk about that on Wednesday morning. I did watch the Lakers play the Bucks and the Clippers play the Bucks, on Sunday morning. And the Lakers did seem like they had a lot more juice than the Clippers have right now. Like, obviously,
the Lakers are just a more desperate team right now. And I don't think it's a coincidence that like a LeBron James team is now trying to kick it into gear the last 20 games of the season. Like, I don't think that's a coincidence.
It's that much. Like, I don't think the spread should be like that much more if it's the Clippers than the Lakers right now. Like, I think the Wolves have just as good of a chance of beating the Clippers with this roster as is right now as they did, you know, the Lakers. And you wouldn't think that looking at standings maybe, but I guess I say that to mean you get one or two guys back. Like we were just saying, I think they can compete with the Clippers, and an extra body maybe makes it so you play four good quarters or three and a half good quarters rather than two and a half good quarters.
Yeah.
Like they did last night. I do think this team, without just Cat, has enough to stay competitive here. You start stripping out a couple others, now this is a very mediocre team in the grander landscape of the team, or of the league. But we will see. Yes, like Chris said, he'll be there. Next up is Wolves Clippers back at Crypto. You're following Chris for updates from LA, and you're reading his stories over at the Star Tribune. Chris, appreciate you making it happen.
By the way, I enjoyed your tweet about how you said, "Oh, it's crazy that the Clippers are playing at noon and the Lakers are playing on the same court at 6:30." Like I've seen that with hockey before. Like you see they turn over the ice to the court pretty quickly.
Yeah, you probably saw that at United Center a bunch.
Saw that a lot at United Center. Yeah, yeah.
It is crazy though. I mean, you're right. I now have gathered. I understand it happens. I'm still saying it's crazy.
You're not wrong. Like it's one of the things that's cool is like sometimes when you're in the press, like back when I used to cover hockey, you'd work in the press box upstairs and you'd be there like working as like the arena crew was turning over the floor. And it's really just like they wheel out all these wood panels. That is the basketball floor. And they just piece it all in like a puzzle. And, you know, it takes them, I think the whole process takes them like maybe 90 minutes to 2 hours to complete.
Crazy.
Like that's all they need is about 2 hours to turn over hockey to basketball or basketball to hockey.
And so, the ice is below it.
Yeah, the ice is below it. And there's insulation underneath the basketball floor to keep the moisture from seeping through. And yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool to see.
As
the floor is getting assembled over the ice.
There was one time, I think it was before you were on the beat, that like Disney on Ice was at Target Center.
Yeah. They had to postpone the game, right? I wasn't there, but I've heard about it. Yeah.
They did not have that layer or whatever. Yeah. There was water coming through the floor. So I'm standing by. It's still pretty crazy.
Yeah,
but it is. They made it happen. The Wolves did not. He's Christopher Hine. You can follow him on Twitter at Christopher Hine. I'm Dane at Dane Moore NBA. Next up will be Jace on Wednesday morning after Wolves Clippers. Until then, he's Chris. I'm Dane. Peace out. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.